Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach integrier- und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
On the 12th of January 2020, citizens in a 10-kilometer radius of the Pickering Nuclear Generating Station was pinged an emergency message onto their mobile devices. These messages warned that there was a reported incident, but that there was no abnormal release of radioactivity. Now, not all countries do this, but in Canada, we get little alerts from time to time, often a missing persons report to look out for certain vehicles to report to the police. And for the most part, it works. These Amber Alerts draw attention to what emergency services need and allows a broader set of eyes to look out for something important. But this alert was different. In the news, it was reported to be an accident, a mistake by the plant when performing a routine training exercise, similar to the false missile alert sent out to the state of Hawaii. But a takeaway success that their system works should an actual event like this happen. But I'm one of the few people that can tell you, it wasn't a mistake. Nor was the information in the false warning correct. It was something much worse. The Pickering Nuclear Generating Plant publicly began construction in 1966. Back then, they'd been upfront about the idea to power a large front of the Ontario region. And right now, it sits as one of the oldest nuclear power plants in the world, and one of the largest. On the surface, everything seems sound. An investment was made, and the owners and workers are doing their best to get the most out of it. But when you look deeper into the plant, you'll find that a number of discrepancies start to peel away the veneer of the plant, and you may get a glimpse of what's really going on. There were two stations at the plant, stations A and B. These stations had a few differences and also a number of similarities, notably a shared vacuum building, a negative pressure containment chamber. After cuts to station A, in which units 2 and 3 were shut down, station A and B were merged into one unit. There's one word there that should have stuck out to you, something which paves the way to the truth behind the Pickering power plant: containment. In the 1960s, something so wild and dangerous warranted the government, and maybe even societies we don't even know of, to filter millions into a power plant front, all to create the perfect containment conditions for this creature. Not many were around to even give witness to such a creature, and many less are around today to even ask whether it be of natural or unnatural causes of death. More is known about the containment itself, as they had to pull in trusted workers to man the glorified cell 25-8. I was one of these grunts. I'd worked my way through various engineering jobs in various plants, which caught the notice of the Pickering owners. I first thought this was a fantastic opportunity, a recognition of my skill in this craft. Little did I know, they just wanted more meat for the grinder. I did my due research before moving to Ontario. I found out there were a number of incidents previously and prepared to pick their brains in order to show initiative and that I wanted to push the plant forward into a safer direction. I wanted to look diligent in management's eyes. This didn't go down as expected. I was interviewed in a room full of other prospective-looking workers. We went through a series of tests and interviews. Though, in hindsight, these interviews played out more like an interrogation. Each time I pushed back a question about the plant, in my mind trying to look informed, they would clam up and write something down. After a few instances of this, I took it as a sign to shut my mouth. In the end, those who accepted the role were given the job. It seemed more like a song and dance, and that we were all already chosen for the job. All we had to do was accept. throughout all this, one good thing did come of it. I met another like-minded engineer. Adrian was marginally older than me, with salt and pepper hair to show his medals of experience. If it wasn't for meeting Adrian and wanting to work with such an interesting person, I probably would have turned down the role. We started almost immediately, moved near site in some pop-up houses built specially for workers. Adrian managed to get his whole family moved to the company's expense, and over time, I shared many a meal with them. It seemed like the budget for our level of work was a bit absurd how high it was, but obviously, that's something you don't want to question. Don't look a gift horse in the mouth, as they say. The contracts were aggressive. NDAs, lifetime silence about corporate dealings, promises to never share anything with the media. But the promises they made us make, compared to the money thrown at us, we thought what we were signing up for was more than worth it. Little did we know that that was the bait on the end of the hook. Our first day could only be described as indoctrination. We were sent to these classes that just spilled the beans. We were assaulted with corrections on anything we had or hadn't heard about the place. Something I researched beforehand was an incident on the 1st of August 1983. It was reported that the pressure tube in G16 in the now defunct Pickering A Unit 2 developed a 2-meter long split. Workers managed to safely shut down the reactor and investigate the damage. In the various articles about the incident, the cause was pinned on the mislocation of the annulus gas spacer springs, which allowed the hot pressure tube to sag and touch the inside of the cold calandria tube, leading to the hydrogen enrichment of the cooler areas. This led to small cracks, which built up and eventually caused a long rupture. No pictures were taken for obvious reason, and the reporters simply took the professional's word on face value. This was an utter farce. The damage wasn't built up on a pressure tube, but rather some expanse of protective wall. What we were shown were numerous pictures of the damages developing, the splits all building up over a series of time-lapse snapshots. However, something which was too perfect to be an accident was the pattern of threes. Each new mark were three perfectly parallel scores. Through much denial at the preposterous idea, it was too hard not to think that they looked almost like scratch marks. The final slide was of the outside, through the thin 2-meter-long gash that was visible from the other side. The faintest image visible through the narrow slit was what looked like an eye. Incident after incident was revealed to cover a more sinister truth. On the 10th of December 1994, there was a, quote, loss of coolant accident reported. It was said to be the most serious accident in Canadian history in 2001 by the Standing Senate Committee on Energy, the Environment and Natural Resources. The emergency core cooling system was used to prevent a meltdown. They say that the best way to lie is to admit something embarrassing. This was the most extreme example of that. Such a huge farce was taken as a miracle of avoiding catastrophe. If only it was a nuclear explosion that was the threat. Whatever is contained deep within the Pickering nuclear plant, it wanted out. And throughout the years, it was getting closer and closer at achieving its freedom. On the 14th of March 2011, it was announced that there was a leak of 73 cubic meters of demineralized water into Lake Ontario from a failed pump. However, a statement was made that there was negligible risk to the public. Life moved on, but internally, it was noted that whatever was contained was searching for more than one route of exit, and it had found the liquid pumps that time. These were just the announced incidents you can find on Wikipedia. But more undocumented cases were revealed in our week of indoctrination. Whether it was fear of consequence or a feeling of patriotic duty to help contain what was inside for the greater good of the Canadian people and maybe even the North American continent, we who stayed dutifully took to the tasks provided. We worked diligently to make sure everything went smoothly. Had this been a normal nuclear plant with a much overqualified staff, this should have been a cakewalk. However, this wasn't a normal plant, and the circumstances were more dire than what was implied in the dread-inducing seminars. We worked tirelessly to patch up problems sprouting all over the plant. They cropped up at a frequency much higher than normal rate. We definitely passed all levels of legal working hours, and many provincial safety standards were ignored in favor of hasty results. It was obvious why a huge new batch of experienced recruits were brought in. It had been a while since a major incident, and it was quickly implied that a big one was looming. Adrian and I were a dream team. We often went above and beyond what was expected, bouncing off each other in both experience and motivation. We very quickly became the go-to guys for higher level threats and incidents. What we found when studying the schematics of the plant was a huge empty space located almost in the center of both facilities. When station A and B were separate, it was to optimize two different workflows. One worked on the power aspect, providing the face of the company, whilst the other purely worked on containment. However, over the years, improvements were made in both areas, and it was found that combining both stations was now more efficient. Thus, the merge of both stations was initiated. What took more digging was when we found out that this was actually in an effort to harness some form of energy from whatever was inside. It explained the higher output, despite the closure of various units in both stations. How they did this is years beyond my understanding, but what they didn't account for was the effect it had on the creature's behavior. Lashes of energy and movement would sporadically happen without notice, and the game of cat and mouse began, with the creature creating a problem and the workers scrambling to fix it in time, the publicly reported incidents being the close calls of failure. We sussed out through subtle questions to the higher-ups that the inner chamber had many layers. It was conceived originally as overkill, that the original many-meter-thick wall would contain whatever was inside, and that the other two were an unnecessary precaution. But now that whatever was inside had long since cracked the first two, what many people, even internally, didn't know was that we were on the last line of defense. Things were more critical than we thought. It all came to a head when our entire complex was woken by an alarm we had never heard before, something which we all took to mean all hands on deck. We hastily threw on our work gear and made our way to the plant. An identical alarm was simultaneously going off at the plant, which confirmed our suspicions. This was serious. Fires were being handled by the on-site firefighters that bravely pushed back the infernos, threatening to overheat critical systems. Many technicians were redirecting cooling and airflow to alleviate any kind of meltdown. That left us, the engineers, to chase down any physical problems and patch them up ASAP. All the while, huge scrapings and bangs could be heard echoing through the thick metal walls of the center chamber. Whatever it was fighting as hard as it could to get out, and it was now our job to stop it. Hours went by, constantly an uphill battle. It was the hydra of problems. Fix one, and two more took its place. On top of that, whatever we did fix, we did in such a shoddy manner that they threatened to undo at any moment, if they didn't already immediately after. Exhaustion took many of us out, and worst of all, a new problem arose. There was a huge set of metal panels that looked like they were the last panels to complete the central chamber. What we never pieced together, nor were we informed, was that these panels weren't just the last panels to what was probably the most secure room in existence. It was a door, and it was opening. Due to the weight, it took an incredible amount of mechanics for the most minuscule of movement, topped off by the fact that this was made with a peak of 70s technology. This curse was our blessing, as we had a number of hours before it would open. But what is ordinarily an ample amount of time for troubleshooting was now a dire deadline. Panic shot through the labs and facilities. Many scrambled to get into any of the old schematics, non-digitalized, whilst some fled, choosing to abandon their posts in the futile ideas of escape. The faintest gunshots show the level of tolerance the higher-ups had about deserters. For every inch the door opened, we were studying up on the complicated engineering that went into such an amazing contraption. The project was years ahead of its time, but due to the era-based technology, it gave us a chance to grasp the blueprints in a timely manner. However, no matter what we troubleshot, nothing turned up why it was opening. As time passed on, it became harder to concentrate on our studies, while all we could hear was the deafening bangs that sent shockwaves throughout the entire facility. The looming realization that whatever it was that was locked away long ago was tantalizingly close to its freedom. And it was getting motivated. Armed personnel, dressed as scientists and lab assistants that were seemingly undercover, stood at the forefront of the opening now, firing away, fighting in any way they possibly could. The red smear at the opening being the only remaining memory of one who got a bit too close to the claw, rattling through every so often. Adrian then found something. A point of contention within the pistons of the door. Though the whole thing was locked up and had many fail-safes, he realized that there was a miscalculation in the schematics, which meant that if this one specific piston was compromised, it had sent the door on an automatic sequence to open. It was the only thing that made sense in the otherwise tight plans of an era gone. However, there was one downside to this discovery. The only way to fix it was from the inside. Now, getting in wasn't the problem. Many human-sized crawl spaces were designed like an ant hive for minor engineering access. When we used them, we never had to go much deeper than a bit past the surface, but we knew that they wound on into a vast network. But when they were used to access the inner chamber long ago, it was nothing but an empty chamber, a luxury we, in present time, didn't have. In the silence between the thooming booms of the reverberating metal, we silently looked at each other, our eyes wordlessly discussing the fact that one of us had to go in. Many of us had families, friends, and a life we wanted to live. This wasn't like a video game, where after a noble sacrifice, we could smugly sit back, knowing in our head we made the right choice. This was real life. To actually be faced with one's mortality throws all noble ideas from one's mind in favor of an innate sense of self-preservation. I want to emphasize this because what Adrian offered to do was beyond what I felt was humanly possible to undertake in that moment. He spoke up that he was most familiar with what needed to be done since it was him who found the floor, and that he'd be in and out before we knew it. But who was he kidding? We were all as qualified as him, and we all knew that we could have done it with our eyes closed. Though it was transparent, he was trying to downplay things, even to himself. Knowing it was our only option at that point, we all went along and gave him our best. Now, the race was on. We wrenched open a small crawl chute a ways down from the entrance. Though it was further away from where the work was needed on first glance, it was the fastest way to a connecting tunnel to the inside. However, it would still take him a while before he'd even get into the inner chamber. All the while, the door was still opening at its daunting pace, and one glance at the shredded corpses showed that time was not on our side. A monstrous hand was now coming through. All we could do was watch while whatever wanted out fought tooth and nail, clawing giblets through the ajar door piece by piece every so often. Though the thick metal walls would cut out the frequency, Adrian's radio came through with updates on his whereabouts. Occasionally, he'd ask for minor directions to navigate the labyrinth of crawl spaces. it was imperative that he make it through ASAP. So we had shreds of paper all around us with maps upon maps of the circuitry and pipes. I, however, was somewhere else. I sat at the main console with one job. If things got dire, I was to hit one button to send out a warning to all nearby residents that a threat was imminent. A second option to tell them to evacuate immediately. I trusted my fellow engineers to translate the schematics to Adrian, and I was left with the daunting task of determining failure past the point of no return. I felt like a captain ready to go down with the ship, because by the time I'd be ready to hit the second button, it would be far too late to escape. Not like we had that luxury in the first place. Through the chatter from the radio I was left with, I could hear Adrian was only a few turns away from the main chamber. The team were hopeful and cheering him on as he got closer. I didn't have the heart to tell them that in front of me, I saw an entire arm reaching through, sweeping around for anything he could get his disgusting hand on. Whatever it was in there, it was huge. It was reaching out to what I can only presume was its shoulder, and it was reaching into the open working area outside of its confinement in long, many meter bursts. It could easily grab a team of adults in one hand. Its nails were sharp in an unclean way. It looked like whatever it had for fingernails were long since shattered, probably from years of escape attempts, but that left them in shreds of serrated edges. In some ways, I'd have preferred they were the long claws they looked like they once were. At least a slice from it would have been clean. Whilst the arm was still scrambling around erratically in the main hall, Adrian made it through and had to drop to near radio silence lest he alert the scrambling behemoth. The silent moments were more tense than during Adrian's journey, as the silence made us fill in the gaps in logic we were trying our hardest not to think about. We were ecstatic to hear a faint voice from the other end. Adrian confirmed he had made it to the piston. As he theorized, it was in fact damaged, and he set about fixing it as fast and best he could. At the same time, the arm retracted, and much to my shock, not two, but four hands grabbed each side of the still opening door, and with an ungodly strength, it tried its darndest to pry the gap further. Whatever those 70 scientists were smoking when they came up with the insane contraption before us, I want some, because despite its best efforts, the door didn't budge further than its slow, consistent opening speed. But it was all placebo for the creature, as not only was an arm threatening to poke through, it was wide enough that its gaunt torso was starting to squeeze through. And what we saw was more than we bargained for. A head and half of its upper body squeezed through. Anyone who was complacent with the arm's length were taken by surprise from its insanely long reach. The only thing constricting its escape was its bony pelvis. However, it didn't care, as it snatched up any bystander not quick enough to escape with its four wildly swinging arms and gobbled them down with ravenous speed. Screams rang out, and all hands in the main hall were in full route out of the chamber. We were at a level where I had to make a call that I wished wasn't true, that there was a chance we were going to fail. I hit the first failsafe. A message rang out to all phones in a 10-kilometer radius, warning residents that something was going down at the plant. Some people in the facility checked their phones, and the mood of the entire place plummeted as the daunting realization kicked in that this might be it. But we still had one hope left. Adrian. However, we watched as his time ran out. The creature scrambled back in with haste, an opposing action to everything we had witnessed beforehand. We didn't have long to theorize before we came to the settled conclusion that the only factor was Adrian. He was in the middle of radioing through an update before a sickening sound rang through the radio set. Then, silence. The silence was more than we were used to. At this point, Silence meant a lack of spoken words between the resounding thooms of the creature. However, all noise had ceased. Not wanting to become complacent, we waited in hope, all while the door still slowly slid open. We very quickly realized we still needed to deal with that, so a small team was sent into the door to reach the point where Adrian had been working. All that remained of him were two arms, one still holding onto the last tool he was working with, the other cast next to his radio. The small team very quickly finished the job and got out before the door closed. We were all left in a solemn time of peace to process what had happened. We grieved in a short period before knowing our priority of getting back to work. Engineers finished the patching up process, scientists went back to managing the plant's power output, cleanup crews were set about viscera cleanup, and I sat at the console with one last message to send out. That the previous message was nothing but a mistake. A beautiful lie to keep peace. We went on the best we could with what remained of the team. We later picked up a large batch of recruits. Like me, there were a heap of overqualified workers for the positions advertised that very quickly settled into doing top-notch work. However, mixed in were a batch of duds. People that got the deal of a lifetime. Insane pay for work they were woefully unprepared and underqualified for. A common factor was that they had no family to go back to. Working wanderers that didn't fit into the motif of the company. It wasn't hard to piece together why. They are soon to go into the center chamber for some, quote, hands-on experience. Afterwards, we qualified professionals are to follow to, quote, grade their work. They're very chipper about the experience and are excited for the opportunity. But we know the truth. Adrian's sacrifice had an unintended effect. The higher-ups now know that fresh meat could satiate whatever was inside, more than long enough for us to get some major work done. There's plans to fix the two broken inner walls, plus some plans for modernizations. The fresh recruits haven't gone in yet, and we're already interviewing new hires. More meat for the meat grinder. But it has to be done. For the greater good of the Canadian people, and maybe even the world.